spent an amount of 12 billion, which is 90% lower than the previous year. 51% was allocated to capital projects, while 49% was secured for routine and periodic maintenance. If you analyze our statistics for the past few years, you will see that expenditure has gone down for reasons that we have tabled with the committee for. Number one, the complications that have come with the supply chain reforms that have happened at National Trade. Secondly, of course, it's the challenges that relate to GFIP and our inability to access funding from the bond market, which then by extension meant that we had to borrow from Peter to pay Paul by taking some of the money from the non-toll portion of our network to assist the toll part of our network. These are international benchmarks that we use to determine the quality of the road network that we run as SANRA. The first one is road roughness. And the benchmark is for us to maintain a network that, of course, has a roughness that is under 4.2 meters per kilometer. In terms of our network, 96.4% of our network meets that criteria, which internationally is a very good benchmark, comparable with many progressive countries around the world. In terms of rut depth, we need to ensure that we maintain the depth of rut in our roads to a minimum of 20 millimeters. And if we analyze our network, we find that 99.5% of our network meets that criteria. In terms of microtexture, we need to make sure that we maintain a level of microtexture that is over 0.4 millimeters to ensure safety during wet weather and so on. And 99.1% of our network meets that criteria. So the National Road Network System is in very, very good condition. This is the slide that articulates the pavement condition according to the pavement condition index. SANRAL does condition assessment of its road network on an annual basis. This is a standard that we would want all our roads in South Africa to adhere to. Of course, we know we've got challenges in other spheres of government, but SANRAL does it on an annual basis to determine the condition of the network, because with that, you are able to then plan for proper asset management on an annual basis. The results of the assessment we did in 2019 shows that only 4.1% of our roads are in poor to very poor condition. The international benchmark is that we should not reach 10%. So we are well inside of that, beating many progressive countries internationally. From a funding capital perspective, we continue spending on non-toll roads amounted to 9.376 billion. Still a sizable amount of expenditure, but significantly less compared to our expenditure prior to 2017, for reasons that I explained. Spending on toll roads has dropped to 3.3 billion, again dropping from the level that we used to have prior to 2017 because of the challenges with the detail challenge. This slide articulates the grant that we received through the Department of Transport as an allocation to SANRAL. In this financial year, 2018-19, we got 18.6 billion for the non-toll portfolio. 12.3 billion we spent for the non-toll portfolio, and 0.5 billion of that is a grant that subsidizes the e-toll scheme, as had been determined in the new dispensation. unfortunately, during the financial year, we had to move 5.75 billion from the 12.37 billion to the fraud portfolio in view of the challenges over our growing concern status and meeting the obligations of maturing debt during the year that we needed to adhere to. As a result, that 5.5 billion could not be spent on what it was initially planned for on the non-toll side, but had to plug the gap on the toll side. This only serves to emphasize just how important it is for a decision to be made on this e-toll challenge for federal to get back to the level of performance that the tolls will have. If you see the trends in expenditure over the years, you will see that there's been a 50% decrease on the toll side, largely because we have had to postpone some of the projects because we are not able to access funds from the fund market. The rest of the slides just demonstrate income from the toll business, what we have spent on roads, what we have spent servicing the loans that we have to repay, and what we have spent to operate the road network itself. We have a lot of expertise in offering geotechnical solutions, and we frequently get consulted during the year for that work. We do innovative road design to improve the safety performance of roads, and there were specific interventions that were made on the bridge over the Olifants River on the N17 in Cabrillo in this regard. There's work that was done in the Eastern Cape relating to slope stability, specifically in the R61. We've got a collaboration with the University of Pretoria and the CSIR, where we are jointly developing an integrated laboratory facility, which will be located on the grounds at the University of Pretoria and partly at the CSIR. This is a very important piece of infrastructure that is going to help us improve and increase South Africa's technical know-how and performance in relation to material testing and laboratories. The reference facility would accredit the performance of South African laboratories themselves that do these material tests, and we also want to use the facility to train material testers. It's a very, very important facility this, that we are implementing jointly with the University of Pretoria and the CSIR. We, of course, launched the Sunroll app, which has seen significant take-up. It makes it easier for people who subscribe to the e-toll scheme and those that use the e-tag to travel across our country on our toll road network system, to top up and check their balances and interact with the scheme through the app. The transactions have now grown to a total of 12 million since launching the app, and we're quite satisfied that the appetite and take-up of the app has been successful. From a social and relationship capital perspective, the value that was the form by SME is just over 3 billion in the financial year in question. The percentage of contracts that went to black-owned companies is 72%, and the percentage by value of work that went to black-owned SMEs is 83%. With all of the challenges I've demonstrated, this is a very, very good performance by Sunroll in this category. We have been struggling with the percentage of value of work that was given to black-owned companies hovering around 50 to 60%. To have increased it to 83% means that there is strong focus that within the SMME category, we are prioritizing SMEs that are black-owned. 26,000 work opportunities were created. This largely because of projects that we have committed over the past few years. Because in recent years we've had significant problems issuing new work. I must comfort the committee though to say started to reissue work, and industry is going to be flooded with a lot of work from Sanlam going forward. We are issuing tenders at a rate of some 20 per month, and this will go ahead for the next 12 months or so. So we are really ramping back up to make sure that industry has projects and try to contribute to rescue the construction industry. Training was conducted for individuals amounting to 1,577. There's road safety education that was imparted to more than 200,000 individuals, and community development projects were implemented worth some 221 million. This is just a further articulation of the share of contracts and work by SMMEs. In terms of all projects, as I've demonstrated, black-owned companies by contract were 72%, this by value was 83%. The non-black companies got 15% by contract and 6% by value. The contracts that are non-compliant are 13 and 11% respectively. By non-compliant, we mean when we issue tenders, you normally check the qualification criteria of entities that bid. But during the project, sometimes it happens that somebody's CIDP registration lapses or somebody's BE certificate lapses. It would get them to fall into that category, even when they were compliant when we initially started the process. From community development projects, again, we are demonstrating how things have changed over the years. There has been a significant growth in terms of contracts awarded, growing from 59 in 2016-17 to 201 in 2018-19. And then the value of work performed by SMMEs has fluctuated between 90 in 16-17 to 209 million in 17-18, with a slight drop to 161 in 2018-19. The average value of earnings by SMMEs, of course, the trend will show a drop, but that's because you are issuing more contracts to SMMEs, so they have to share our budget in larger numbers. And as a result, it would seem that there's a drop per SMME, but more SMMEs are benefiting in that regard. The distribution of opportunities, of course, we track the gender, we track age, just to make sure that there is a fair and equitable distribution of the job opportunities. In the year in question, 2018-19, we will see that in terms of male 18 to 35, you've got 39%. Male older than 35, we've got 35%. Females between 18 and 35, we've got 16%. And females above 35, we've got 10%. We are working very hard to balance these ratios so that females benefit more from Sanlam projects. In certain cases, it is, however, the reality of the projects that you deliver that does not allow higher percentages of female numbers, purely by the sheer type of work that has to be done. Because in as much as we want to increase opportunities that go to women, we would not want to exploit our women by subjecting them to work that possibly is not appropriate for females on the side. Trends in work opportunities, we will see that in 2016-17, there are work opportunities which we then convert to full-time job equivalents. So the work opportunities would track each individual that we would have appointed on site to work. But because that's the nature of construction, work is not continuous and permanent. You have people engaged in different phases for this, that, and the other. But in the end, you use the formulas that we use to be able to convert that to what a full-time job equivalent would be of the opportunities that we provided to the people that got opportunities for that. And that is the trend. So you will see that there's a steady drop in the number of work opportunities and full-time job equivalents because of the reduction in projects that we've seen over the past 3 years. But as I said, we are ramping up the issue of tenders, and these figures will then start to increase again. In a good year, Sandral will generally deliver, on average, a full-time job equivalent of some 15,000 per annum. In terms of training provided, again, we are showing over the past 3 years the kind of training and courses that were delivered, and again, we are seeing that there's a significant amount of training that Sandral has provided. Concessionaires, building small business and creating jobs, we insist that our concessionaires also make a contribution to job creation and create opportunities for SMEs. And these are the figures that they have spent in their own budget to contribute. From a communications perspective, again, we track the level of stakeholder engagement that we do, because Horizon 2030 has committed for Sandral to engage stakeholders when we deliver projects. We need to make sure that communities and intended beneficiaries are part of our delivery structures, they contribute to implementation, and they assist us to be able to select people that are going to work from a labor perspective on our project, and also they help us coordinate how we're going to recruit local SMEs to participate in our project. So this just demonstrates the metrics of the numbers of engagements that we have held in the different provinces. Sandral uses what we call taking Sandral to the people as a platform to engage with stakeholders on the ground, and the feedback has been positive. It's an opportunity that allows communities to engage not only with the leadership of Sandral, but when we are fortunate for the minister or deputy minister to join us, they also get to interact with us to understand the plan of government in terms of improving their lives. This is, of course, the money that we spend on communications with the media. Very, very important expenditure that we do. Sometimes criticized because other people feel that we should be spending this amount of money. You are damned if you do, sometimes are damned if you don't. Because if you deliver without informing people what you're doing, again, people criticize to say that, but you don't know what this important agency is doing for us. And when we try and spend budget to inform our people, sometimes the criticism comes. But we've got a lot of different types of media that we use, from radio to television, print, outdoor, digital, and other. The ratio of national to community media advertising spending, of course, is demonstrated there. We have really made an effort to increase the portion of money that is spent on community radio stations. Sitting at 31% is a significant improvement, and there's good reception and positive feedback from community radio stations. We track the tone of the media, also to understand exactly what the media is saying about us. In the diagram on the right, you will see that you have about 25% of the media reports being negative. You have 45% of the media reports being neutral, and you have 16% of the reports being positive. And those that are mixed are 14%. When we started with this process 3 years ago, the majority were negative reports. We have made significant progress in turning the tide. Of course, some of these are informed by the incidents that happen on a day-to-day basis. So on a good day, when there's something positive happening about GIFIS, it will sway it towards the positive. But if there's something negative happening about GIFIS, it will sway it to the negative. On the left-hand side, we demonstrate, in terms of the different areas, what our performance was. There are interviews that we would normally do with the media. There are media releases that we would do, and there are media queries that we would generally respond to. When we have less media queries, we see it as positive, because then it means generally the media is not paying attention to someone too much. And the queries are going somewhere else. Social media, we also have a significant presence. Again, 3 years ago, Sanral was nowhere to be found. We have made tremendous progress in engaging with social media, and we beat, I'm proud to say, even our department in social media. And so we've done very well, but we are still second to entities like the Road Accident Fund, who have a significant presence in social media. Sanral is very committed from a natural capital perspective to mitigate the impact of roads on natural environment. Whenever we deliver an infrastructure project, of course, we have to secure an EIA approval, and with that, you have an environmental management plan that you have to implement. With that plan, if there are species of plants or animals that need to be rescued, we will do that to make sure that we preserve them. We also are committed to conserving natural resources like water and soap, etc. Sanral has set up an innovation hub in our office here in Cape Town, led by Mr. Randall Cable, who joins us here today, the regional manager, where we do cutting-edge research for innovation purposes, so that we can apply that innovation to be able to save, for instance, on the energy demand of road construction and maintenance. From a human capital perspective, Sanral has steadily grown over the past 3 years. When I arrived in December 2016, Sanral was about 296 people strong. We now sit at 423. And of course, this has been done in line with the company's employment equity plan. The turnover is pretty small at Sanral, sitting at 5.44%. Internal bursaries are strongly encouraged. We support a lot of our employees to pursue academic qualifications, as you will see. Just about a third are benefiting from our program. We also support citizens through external bursaries, and in this year in question, we awarded a total of 151 bursaries. We also run a pretty successful internship program that unfortunately has been affected by the reduction in the award of tenders, because the more projects we have, the more interns we can place to benefit from experience on site. But we were still able to give opportunities to 165 interns. The workforce profile of employees at Sanral, as I indicated, we are well on our way to meeting the 3-year objective targets that we've set for our employment equity plan. The mix generally shows in top management we have complete balance with a 50-50 profile, male and female. And then of course, as you go up the ranks, you will see that you have females largely in the unskilled parts of our business, and males in the skilled part of our business, but we are working on that to make sure that we balance the scales. Again, if you look at the demographics, you will see that the picture is also changing, but the stark realities of South Africa are also still evident. At top management, 25% of the leadership is African, 25% is colored, which means you have 50% black at the executive level, which is then good. At senior management, you've got 55% black. At professional level, you now have 51% black. At skill level, you've got 59% black, African. And then, of course, if you look at black, it then increases to 87%. So we've made generally good progress in that regard. But you still have, of course, in the unskilled level, a lot of Africans. Need to still work very hard to correct that picture. The population distribution By population group, we've made significant progress over the past 3 years. In 2016, we were hovering around 48% African, but we have since grown that, and I think that is going to stand us in good stead going forward. The target for this 3-year cycle is to get the African component to 64%. And if you look at the trend, you will see that we are well on our way to achieving that. Scholarships, again, a very important part of skills development within SANRAL. We give bursaries to students at high school, primarily to assist our kids to make it through matric, because we have a big dropout rate problem in the country. And second, to set them on their way to getting access to tertiary education. As you will see there, the majority beneficiaries of our bursary program are still African, but we support across all races. If you look at the split between boys and girls, of course, boys still dominate at 64%, but girls have increased to 36%, and we're well on our way to again forcing a balance in that regard. What we found is that there's much more interest now at high school level from girls taking up math and science, which is a good sign. From a corporate performance perspective, we've got KPIs that are captured in our APP, and that, of course, would deal with the different strategic objectives that we've set for ourselves as SANRAL in our medium-term strategic framework. We cluster these to be able to give results to the portfolio committee in this regard. In terms of managing national roles, we missed the target by 2 KPIs. And on the right-hand side, we have explained why those targets have been missed. Where we've met the target, we've not given any explanation because there's none required. In terms of government targeted programs, of course, we seek to support government targeted programs. We missed the target by 2 again, largely again because of the tenders that have reduced through the allocation of non-toll budget to the toll side, which meant that jobs created would have gone down. KPI 3.5, of course, there was just an internal delay in approving performance that would have allowed for more interns to be appointed, but we are correcting that going forward. If we go to the next slide, pursue research, innovation, and best practice. Again, we missed that target by 2. And this is largely because of dependencies in relation to the software development that we needed to do in this regard. All in all, SANRAL was able to achieve 77% in the targets that were set. And of course, we don't want to be complacent about that. We want to pursue a situation where we achieve 100% of our targets. Moving on to volume 2 and talking to annual financial statements. This is our statement of financial position, which traditionally would be known as the balance sheet. We have painted the picture for the current financial year and the previous financial year so that the committee can see how things have moved over the years. The total assets at SANRAL amount to 212 billion, with non-current assets claiming 402 billion. And current assets claiming just under 10 billion. From an equity perspective, it's 293 billion, with the liabilities that SANRAL is confronted with accounting for 119 billion, 100 of which is non-current liabilities. Comparing the two financial years, the asset base of SANRAL has grown from 387 billion to 412 billion. The statement of profit and loss, which is, of course, the income statement, we will see that in the two financial years, the revenue has been quite comparable at about 16 billion. Operating expenses have gone down for the reasons that we explained. And as a result, your operating profit has gone up. Of course, we are not in the business of generating profit. We are a Schedule 3 entity, and we need to try and make sure that we spend a lot of our money. The finance costs are still hefty, sitting at about 4 billion, and for the year, we close with a positive profit of 2.4 billion. The revaluations have been adjusted and have grown a little bit from 22 billion to 23 billion, and the total comprehensive income for the year is 26 billion. The cash flow statement shows that the cash generated from operations grew from 4.5 billion to 7 billion. Interest income is quite comparable at under a billion, and the financial cost paid went down a bit to 3.87. So the net cash from operating activities sits at 3.8 billion compared to a previous year total of 1.2. The net cash from investing activities, of course, is negative here because of the monies that would have gone out of our budget. The net cash from financing activities would be the interest that we've achieved from the investments that we've made, and there's been a significant drop to 2.7 billion. The total cash and cash equivalent for the financial year sits at 8.7 billion. Compared to 7.6 billion in the previous year. The chairperson has already alluded to the fact that we achieved yet another unqualified audit opinion. I think our 15th in our existence at Sunrise, and we will strive to at least maintain an unqualified opinion while we work very hard to achieve a clean one. Our board has set us a 2-year target to achieve a clean audit, and we have been hard at work to make sure that we achieve that. The results in the audit report will show that we have had a significant drop in audit findings in general, and there's been a drop in repeat findings specifically. So there is progress. Of course, we want to eliminate them, but there is positive progress. The AG, of course, will issue what they call key audit matters, which are matters that might present a problem in the future, but they are not problems now. The things that we need to track jointly as the organization and the portfolio committee so that they don't trip Sunrise in years to come. The one area that the AG pays attention to, of course, is how we revalue our road network. But they've done their work, and they are satisfied that we are doing it correctly. The expected credit losses on e-toll trade and other receivables, there's a new IFRS standard that came in, which of course has hit us very hard in terms of what we are able to predict as potential income, taking into account what the new standard says it's going to be. But in the end, it's all accounting processes. If we do end up with what we would have expected would be income, the financial statements would be subsequently adjusted to reflect that. E-toll revenue, of course, the AG is satisfied that our implementation of IFRS has progressed very well, albeit with a bit of delay initially from a Sunrise perspective. Emphasis of matter. The AG is emphasizing that expected credit losses of 10.32 billion were recognized, 10 billion of which relate to e-toll receivables. This is really the only Achilles heel at Sunrise. They said that we have to pay about 10 billion of revenues that are due to us because of this political football called the e-toll. The irregular expenditure was explained by the chairperson, the bulk of which really resides with only two items, I must emphasize. It's bad to have irregular expenditure of 419 million, We have successfully dropped it from what it used to be, sitting at 10 billion, and we are well on our way towards making it zero. But there are really two items that have led to significant irregular expenditure this year. And it's things that, of course, the board will hold us to account on and insist that we clear for years to come. This is the journey we've traveled on irregular expenditure, and I'm sure the committee will see that there has been concerted effort to reduce irregular expenditure over the years. Of course, in any given year, there is a portion that has to do with contracts that were awarded in prior years. And I think the blue demonstrates that. So even while it is 114 million this year, a portion of that is as a result of contracts that were awarded in prior years. So in this financial year, there is definitely progress. Chairperson, thank you very much. That's the end of the presentation.
Okay. Thank you very much. Chairperson, I see you're wearing a beautiful suit. There is a presentation calmly presented, of course, by Sandral, as always. Let's note that fact. And members, you by now know the drill. Maybe before members come in, I must indicate that we are a committee that deals with issues, not people. We do not have attitude. Normally when people come to committees, they think of them being sent packing and all those issues. No. We actually want you in the ring so that we understand the issues. We believe that is better. So let me open up this ring and hear how far do members go. I can see the appetite starting this side. Yesterday it was starting that side. Today the appetite is here. Okay, you know the drill, members, your time and so forth and so on. Let's see the ground running.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the board for the presentation. I just want to touch on a couple of things. On volume 2, you mentioned some of the procurement, focus on wasteful expenditure, but I'm interested in the some of the goods and services of transactions value above 500,000 were procured without inviting competitive bids and deviation from not approved and was not approved by National Treasury as required by paragraph 8 of the National Treasury instruction. That one another thing. Under your fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the majority of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure was caused by interest charged as a result of non-payment of invoices within due dates. That's another thing. And in consequence, I was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence that disciplinary steps were taken against officials who had incurred irregular expenditure. If you can give me something there. And then on page 158 of volume 2, fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the opening balance is 15.1 million incurred in 2017 financial year. This has not yet been condoned as of 31st of March 2019. Those are some of the financial questions. And then on professional fees, how much was spent in the last financial years on professional fees And have SMMEs, black people in general, been benefiting from these expenditures? And then my last question, Che, how much did the printing of these books cost? And who was it awarded to? Thank you, Che.
Except to say, this book looks very nice and very professional. Let's hear a new voice.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning. I didn't greet you properly. I just ushered you in by asking the room to stand, which is my job. good morning, colleagues.
Well, firstly, I need to start on the responses that we received. Chair, you said we could touch on them maybe, vis-a-vis what we had asked when we were there on the 30th of August in this year. What for me is of concern, Chair, is the person who signed the response. It's an engineering executive. I'm new in this committee. I might not know the right protocols, but when a committee gets there and the chairperson is leading the delegation with the CEO, I would expect at least for accountability purposes that one of the two at least signs this. Because if there are issues here, they might say, sorry, we did not sign this. So I think going forward, I would like that through you, Chair, that we get signature from the highest authority. It gives us assurance that you did go through this, as we asked as the portfolio committee. Because when we ask these questions, it's not out of just being funny with you. We really want to get answers and follow up on those answers. Having said that, Chair, I noticed that even in the response that the author was very selective in responding. There were very pertinent issues we asked, and hence my preamble. One of the key questions we had asked, and I think my colleague here was asking it right now, is the access to business by black people. Now, if I listen to the CEO and the chairperson presenting, it looks like Sunrail is shying away from empowering black people, women and youth in particular, to become big businesses. It looks like you are enjoying the numbers as SMMEs. And the question that time was asked particularly, I won't say by who, but I know, why are you in this SMME business? When are you going to produce big black businesses? That to me was asked specifically. It has not been responded to. And given this presentation by yourselves, again, I see that you are shying away from radical economic transformation by empowering black people. It's an annual report. You might not be able to reverse it now, but it's something that I want to put on the table, that as long as we are here, we are going to watch it with hawk's eyes. And you are not going to have coffee with us next time if this picture doesn't change. Maybe today you might have the coffee, but it won't be for too long. We asked that you are acquiring land. We want to know who is benefiting, whose land is this? Where is this money of acquisition of land going to? There is no response in the letter we've received on that one. I asked, it's more of a, it impacts you more than us anyway, but I'd ask specifically, what's the impact, specifically financial, on Woola delays? Because we had said we are here, we might go to our colleagues at Water Affairs and see, can you assist Sunrail to deliver their project? There is no answer. We spoke about stoppage of projects, which is highlighted in your presentation and also in the response. But we asked specifically, what is the cost of that? What is it costing us? And the response doesn't say anything about that at all. Talks about 30% and projects stopped by ward councillors and mayors, etc., and so forth and so forth. Now, again, this emphasizes what I was saying earlier, because you didn't sign this letter of response. Now, I'm highlighting, but I'm feeling reluctant to be hard on you because you didn't sign. The likelihood is that you didn't see this letter before it came. The other question that we had asked specifically, how are we resolving it? Is the conflict that you highlighted again in this response of National Treasury SCM regulations and your general conditions of contract vis-a-vis CIDB in terms of 30% share threshold for local people subcontracting? Again, if you read the response, it is a very, very problematic response, to say the least. It suggests that we do not understand what is happening out there. So that was on the response that we received, Chairperson. Now, coming to the presentation today, I want to go directly to intellectual capital slide, which is your page 62 to 69 of volume 2, I believe. You mentioned that you have an agreement with the University of Pretoria on material testing and so forth and so forth. While I've got absolutely nothing against the University of Pretoria, but again, historically, we know who benefits at the University of Pretoria. The question is, are there no other universities? And I'm not saying don't do it at the University of Pretoria and CSIR, but are there no other previously suffering universities within your reach that you could establish this capacity there? Now, you then, we go on to social and relationship capital. Another slide there. And again, it just to reemphasize the point that I made, if you look at SMME spend, the value of work performed by SMMEs, percentage of contracts by black-owned companies, you know, you look at it vis-a-vis the response that is here, something which is in the letter I emphasized earlier, something is not right. But I'll just plead with you. Sunral is spending a lot of money, and Sunral is owned by government. We want to see radical economic transformation through Sunral. And that is not SMME and people who are picking up paper on the roadside and cutting the grass. We are talking the real stuff, you know. The CEO mentions a statement here which, allow me, Chair, to say it's a bit problematic. You say you are battling with something because of type of work. You don't want to subject women to certain types of work in this construction business. And again, it implies that for you to have achieved, you want women to be cutting grass or digging trenches. No. They must own the businesses that are making money out of Sandra and who are growing. Then there is no question of subjecting them to anything because they will be owning the big business that is there. So there we are unapologetic, Chairperson, about that. You then mentioned the issue of workforce profile. And again, if you look there, it's a trend. You look at the business, the way you spend, the way you spend and block people, and where you go there are just workforce. But if you go there, the split, you'll find that when you get to where the crux of the matter is, the percentage changes now. Black becomes less. You alluded to it yourself and said you are working to it. And I'm just reemphasizing that point that it doesn't help that we have got everyone black here on top. But where the decisions are taken and where the actual things are happening, the picture changes. That is why the ship you are trying to turn around is becoming a bit of a Titanic. You made a point, which is my last point, that you are ramping up in terms of work opportunities out there. Let me end on a good note to say, Chair, that I concur with them. We have been receiving serious complaints that work opportunities are not seen by the majority of people from Sunral. Where exactly does Sunral procure? But recently we are receiving a bit of a positive spin to say now Sunral has come to life. And I think that is the approach we would like to see. in all aspects. Chairperson, thank you so much.
Let's get a new voice, a female voice this time, so that you're not accused of having male voice only.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I would like to apologize that I arrived late. Chairperson, I want to speak on the issue that was raised during presentation by the CEO. He indicated that there are targets that they couldn't achieve. And he gave the reason why they couldn't achieve. But he didn't indicate to us the progress, how, where are they now on those targets, because it is important that you cannot just give us the reason why you didn't achieve and not doing anything. I think you will explain why, how far are you now correcting that. Secondly, Chairperson, when you check the people who are here, most of them are men and one woman. We need women in the decision-making positions. It can't be Mzinwe Zinzizwa always. I think we need to improve that on that one. We understand that there are women, but they are not in the decision-making positions. We must make sure that they are there. It can't be that all of you are men and one woman. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. I'm from the Eastern Cape, and I'd like to ask a question about the R62. That's from outside Humanstorp, from the N2 to Carriedo. I see the road is completed. I would like to thank you. Work well done. But what about the rest of the road between Carriedo, Jobertina, till the Western Cape? I think I've worked out quickly, it's around about 110 kilos. Is there any plans to complete it in the near future? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was in appreciation of the presentation, Chairperson. I was listening to the Chairperson of the Board articulating the difficulties insofar as irregular expenditure is concerned. However, he did not give us a total picture on what is the role, or forever is the role of the internal auditor. Because for me, auditing is not a once-off, it's a process. So I would have difficulties when you are being given an excuse on why the situation is like it is, whereas there are internal auditors and the audit itself is a process. I guess a person is going to be very jealous about Sandra, that it must come out with a clean audit within no time. For obvious reasons, they've been able to really protect the brand. They've done very well in that. However, it will not be a complete process if you still have this kind of 80s outcome. So I really would want to emphasize that. Chair, insofar as making sure that they give a complete report insofar as the making sure that our people are getting into my Amador. I really want to appreciate that. However, under social and relation capital, page 70 to page 97, they do refer to the fact that they have managed to train almost 1.5 individuals. If I can be given a total picture of what then happens after that training, you can train individuals perpetually, But if you don't complete the cycle by doing what Honorable Lisa was saying, to say at the end you want to see organized business people, trade by yourself, but complete the cycle, produce not SMEs, but black business. Because if they are capable to be trained, so what else is now lacking that makes us not to be able to complete the process? I appreciate the report, Chair. I guess the, I'm not sure whether you call the Department of Transport a shareholder in this regard. I guess the shareholder or the mother, Department of Transport, can, to an extent, learn some good practice from Sandran in making sure that they turn the tide. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Let's hear the main voice.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also reiterate the fact that we have noted the report. Let me indicate that the state of the roads in South Africa is in a terrible condition, and yet you say you are underspending, and maintenance of the roads declined for the second time according to your report for consecutive years. One of the engineers once advised us that if you don't maintain a road, by the time you want to maintain them, after a long period, is the same as building those roads twice. Yet you concentrate on toll roads. I would like to know who's the beneficiaries of the money made out of the toll roads. Are black South Africans benefiting anything out of the money collected from the toll roads? Then the former homelands, particularly in Kwakwa, where I come from with the chairperson, there is a road that falls within a Sandral there. That road has contributed immensely in slaughtering the people of Free State, especially the raids, Kestell, Kwakwa Road to Mount Oxenzus Mountain, which is mostly used by tourists. In this regard, tourism is now a thing of the past because of your underspending. Yet, do you monitor the community development project that you say was 221 million rand? I'm not sure. We as a committee, we want value for money. Not to train people to be cheaters, but to be teachers. They must be taught to develop quality roads that must last for years and not contribute to the changing of money, for the chowing of money by the entrepreneurs. Last but not least, I'm going to repeat this. You seem to have women for, you seem to take women for granted. Only 26% of women in South Africa are employed on the 2018-2019 contract. And when do you think you will meet the target of 50-50? Taking into account that women are more in numbers compared to men in South Africa. How do you let people know about your scholarship programs, particularly the ones from the rural areas? How do you teach them about this good scholarship program so that they can apply for it? Thank you, Chairperson.
Let's hear the finance person.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chairperson. I think I'm not dealing with finance today. Thank you so much. Welcome the report. But also, the breakdown of the communications budget, your media budget, in terms of the community radio, community media. Stream here, it only says that you are spending 0.1% in community media. Perhaps if you can give me the following three. Print, how much are you spending on print in community radio? How much are you spending how much are you spending on community media in terms of print? How much are you spending in community media in terms of radio? And also, if you can give us the geographics as well. In which provinces are you spending those monies? Because if you take a province like Gauteng or take a region like Johannesburg, we are littered with many community radio stations. And what what informs that spend as well? Is it in line with the ratings, the audio ratings that they are issued? And then also, in terms of a supply chain management policy within SANRAL, if you do have a functional supply chain management policy, in which directorate does it reside? Who is the custodian of the SCM policy within SANRAL? The reason why I'm asking this is, if you look at your regular expenditure, it paints a picture of shared disregard and treating with contempt the SCM policy that you have in place. Because how can you have a regular expenditure of that magnitude if there is a functional SCM policy in place? And then if we look at there's accountability here that needs to be, we need to hold the board accountable. Why? In the 179.2 million rands of irregular expenditure which was spent, there is a decision here that says that at board level, there was a subcommittee which was established. Now, board chairperson, who established that subcommittee? Obviously, it was at board level. You took a decision to establish that subcommittee. The Auditor General says that subcommittee was irregular and was not supposed to be established. Now, your establishment of a board subcommittee cost us as taxpayers 179 million. Most of the time, we tend to go after management executives within state-owned entities. But here is an anomaly at board level. There is noted here that the establishment of that subcommittee, which subsequently took the decision, cost us 179.2 million rand. Now, who was overseeing this process? What informed this process? Usually, at board level, you get advice. You get executive managers, non-executives who sit on the boards, and they give you advice. But ultimately, the decision makers lies with the board. What informed this decision making? What happened here? And we need to hold you accountable as the board, because you the one who put us in this quagmire which we find ourselves in now. You know, it cannot be that always we go after management. We need to hold you accountable, and you must give us answers. It cannot continue to be like this. And CEO, we are saying that you have only had irregular expenditure of only about 140 million rands. If you remove if you take away the 179 million rands, you take away the 99 million rands as well, which was spent which was spent in this case. Yes, if you take the 179.2 million rands and the 99.4 million rands, which was spent before the approval by the National Treasury, you are then left with about 140 million rands of irregular expenditure. Now, if you read the Auditor General report, or in terms of their findings, in terms of top five non-compliance areas, SANRAL is listed there as procurement and contract management, material misstatements in submitted financial statements, and also prevention of unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. But also, let's talk about consequence management. If you are saying that irregular expenditure about a few years ago was 10 billion rands, now you've reduced it. If I was to be generous in this regard, the 179 million rands and the other monies, it leaves us with 140 million rands of irregular expenditure. Consequence management, who is responsible? Do we have a consequence management mechanism in place? And you said that the CFO is not here, and I believe he is the custodian in this case, and he needs to give us answers to say what is it that is going to do to ensure that we do not find ourselves with over 140 million rands of irregular expenditure. Now, again, if you go to page 14 as well of the status on of internal control as reported by the HSA, it also paints another bleak picture in terms of revenue management. Here they're saying that the chances of you being in a position to manage or the chances of you being in a position to collect your debt or your inability to collect monies owed to you may and will result in impairment of receivables due to amount owed being irrecoverable. Is there a plan in place on how we are going to recover all of these monies which are owed to you? If yes, what is that plan? Can we monitor it? Can we track it over time? What is the plan? Also, in terms of assets and your liabilities, now current liabilities exceeding your current assets indicates liquidity issues. And SANRAL is listed, SANRAL as one of the entities which is having this issue. And also, which means that you will not be able to pay your creditors as payments become due. Now, we have spoken about consequence management, and also, lastly, as a closed chair, the responses that we got from the from SANRAL as well, I said, if you can also give us the progress in terms of the transfer of R573, because you said that it falls under two provinces, Mpumalanga and Gauteng. The Gauteng component was a problem, and you said that you're having engagements with the Premier of Gauteng to transfer that stretch. How far are you? And you indicated that there were challenges in terms of projects being stopped by unscrupulous and criminal syndicates, masquerading as business people, fronting as business forums, demanding 30% and all of those things. Then you said that there were engagements with where the minister had intervened. As far as the R573 stretch, how far is there any progress there? What is the status? But I think those are my submissions. Che, if I can be given that information. Thank you.
And you promised me that you'll not be dealing with finances. Honourable Member Hansinger.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation and also the update on a whole lot of aspects. Chair, I would like to address some operational issues and then move on to some financial management issues. Firstly, due to proximity, I have the exposure to be close to one of your big projects, the N7. And it's a long and an extended project which leads to a lot of frustration, but no frustration can weigh up against the excitement in having double lane in both directions, N7 in the future. And I must really compliment you on the progress, also the way that you deal with the renowned Cape Town weather conditions during winter time, and also the way you manage the flow of traffic under the conditions of having to build this huge project. Also very grateful for the improvement around the noon junction improvement, and in particular the pedestrian crossing that has sadly led to the loss of life of many people having to cross the national road. But now the fact that we have a pedestrian crossing in the future would certainly alleviate that big risk. Chairperson, in 2017-18, we requested SANRAL to forward us with a quarterly report on the progress around the Mulatto Road. This is really important. It's a very important corridor. The Mulatto Corridor is one which carries a lot of expectation around economic benefit, but then also safety benefit, because huge loss of life. It's known as the road of death and all sorts of descriptions around that. I don't know whether Chairperson SANRAL has in fact submitted this requested report, quarterly update to the department, and that it's the department that haven't forwarded this to us, but I would like to know from SANRAL, what happened to that very serious and very direct request, either in 2017 or 18 or both years, because we were very firm in requesting that regular update on a quarterly basis. Then, related to that, there was a veriment that took place in that 3 billion rand was moved from PRASA to SANRAL non-toll network. Also, 5.8 billion was moved from the non-toll network, your budget, to GFIP. Now, this talks about budget construction. If in total 8.8 billion rand needs to be moved around to make something work in your books, I would like to get some insight around your budget construction. Because if you suddenly need 8.8 billion rand to fix something, something is wrong in terms of planning. I would like to know how you went around that. Then when we get to financial statements, which remain a problem in that AG reports, that the preparation of your financial statements remain a concern. If my calculations are right, this is your 15th or 16th unqualified audit report, and I'm also hopeful with the board that you will get it right in the next 2 years. You've certainly practiced a lot in just missing it frequently, so let's do it this time. But then, you know, if I can highlight one particular issue, seeing that you've got financial people here to answer this, then you make use of a depreciation replacement method in the re-evaluation of your road network and road structures. How are you addressing this, and why do you keep on using this particular depreciation replacement method opposed to, you know, other alternatives that there are? What's the benefit in sticking to this, and what's the conversation like with the AG around this particular depreciation method that you are applying? Lastly, Chair, there is an investigation that's been carrying on since 2013 by PCI, the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigations, and it's about perpetrations against SANRAL. It's 5 years. You know, what's the complications? Why isn't there finality? And if you can just give us an update on that, it would be insightful. Thank you, Jane.
Okay. There you are. I am here, Chairperson. I know you cannot see me. It's okay. How do you speak when I have not pointed at you?
Because you cannot see me.
Okay.
Chairperson, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate the opportunity to be able to pose the following question to our colleagues at the entity. Chairperson, in 2014, there was a sinkhole that started on the N12 in the town of Stilfontein on your way to Klerksdorp in the Matasana local municipality. This particular sinkhole was started by a leaking water tower, which is the responsibility of the Matasana local municipality in the northwest. At that point, there was only one sinkhole in 2014, and now those sinkholes are now four, and they are increasing daily. There was a commitment, if I'm not mistaken, by SANRAL to make funds available to make sure that those particular sinkholes are removed, and that the municipality also makes funds available to make sure that indeed the municipality is able to get that project underway, and so that we can fix those particular sinkholes. Because this is a very important national road, which a lot of trucks utilize the road to Upington, Kimberley and Cape Town, respectively. I want to find out from our colleagues at SANRAL what is the progress in terms of engagements with the municipality, because I knew that the municipality had said that they don't have funds. I want to know whether SANRAL is then committed to making those funds available so that we may be able to get those sinkholes fixed before they exacerbate even further. And what is then SANRAL going to do if the municipality perhaps still does not have funds? Is SANRAL willing then to put all those funds available and take care of the project themselves? Thank you very much, Chair.
Is there anybody that I don't see next to you?
No.
Okay, so. All right. Chair and your team, there it is. If you're in court, I would be saying, can you give me mitigating factors before I present my judgment?
Honorable Chair and honorable members, thank you very much for all these questions, all of which I must say reiterate to us the importance of addressing matters of concern to the people of this country as represented by the honorable members here. With your permission, please, Honorable Chair, I'd like to start off by correcting, a misinterpretation of the matter of the committee of ALCO, Assets and Liabilities Committee, by one of our honorable members. The matter with that committee, as presented by the AG, is not that the committee is wrongly established. I think I need to emphasize that. If you check page 156 of volume 2 of our integrated report, that is note 45 that the AG refers all of us to. And indeed, it is explained there that the issue is really that committee approved the procurement of a building, and the AG is of the view that the board charter the charter that the board gave to that committee does not explicitly say that committee is allowed by the board to approve that kind of purchase. That approval, according to the AG, must be done, should have been done by the board itself. So the issue has got nothing to do with the validity of the existence of the committee. I just thought I would draw the honourable member's attention to that one. And therefore, as the board, while we take full responsibility for not explicitly giving that committee the mandate to take such decisions, we take full responsibility for that one. But we want to emphasize that it's a duly established committee, it is valid, and it is lawful. So I just thought I would highlight that. But indeed, we also made a commitment to the Auditor General that we will address that matter in reviewing the mandates of all the committees, actually, where we must explicitly state you are allowed to approve this, approve that, but with regards to this, only recommendations and so on, and only the board may approve and the like. And that is the process that we have embarked upon. I must also say, with regard to that very particular procurement, we also undertook to the AG that we would have an investigation into it, because the AG raised quite a few matters of concern, and indeed our internal audit has been conducting an investigation, and that's given us a preliminary report which says that they want to see a fuller and deeper investigation, and that will be taking place. So I thought I would start off with that one, please, Honourable Chair. And Honourable Chair, if I may just deal with some of the issues and have the CEO and his team deal with other matters. And on my part, I also have another board member who, with your permission, please, Honourable Chair, will also add if he feels that he'd like to add to some of the matters I have raised. Firstly, I think as the board, we must apologize to the committee for not signing the responses ourselves. Indeed, from a protocol and the corporate governance point of view, this should have been signed off by us to the committee. So we apologize most sincerely to the committee for not doing that ourselves. And here I'm talking on behalf of the CEO as well, because indeed, if I'm not the one signing, then the CEO should be the next person. So we do apologize profusely for that. On the matter of access to business by black people, particularly women and the youth, we did say, indeed, we have found that that has been a challenge, though we have increased their participation to some extent. But what we are hearing this committee to be saying, in the person of the Honourable Member, is that we now need to move away from black people, women, young people, accessing just the lower level, aspects of our spend in the form of just SMMEs. And it is for that reason that as the board, we specifically said to management, for example, if you look at the value chain when you talk roads, a lot of our people are just participating when it comes to the actual building of the road. But you've got lots of processes towards that. Cement, the availability of cement, for example. The issue of quarries, where we are making significant, I think, progress. You've got the issue of what is called road furniture. Those, for example, the guardrails, the the cement that's used for the flow of water, the concrete that's used for the flow of water, and so on. And we are saying, we have said to management, we want, in line with government's industrialization policy, where it, government has said, we want black industrialists. We've said to our management, we want a clear document that says SANRAL will produce so many black industrialists, who will then participate way beyond just the SMME level and become part of what we call the top five in terms of construction in South Africa. We've said we want the top 10 and the top 15 and so on. And indeed, management has been working on that document, and we expect that they will present it to us shortly, hopefully on the 30th of this month, because on the 30th of this month, we've got a special session of the board focusing strictly on transformation, because we have also said as the board, we can see the transformation that is happening, but it is happening at levels that we do not think contribute to as significant a participation by previously excluded people as we would like to see as SANRAL. And indeed, management has been working on that in a committed fashion. And in fact, they are the ones who gave us the date of the 30th of October, where they've said to us, we will be ready to present to you what we are doing and what we are proposing in terms of taking transformation forward. The question of land and where is the money going to as we acquire land is also a matter that we are looking into. Up until now, we've been using external service providers as far as handling our whole land portfolio is concerned. Now, we took a decision as the board that we would like that to change as far as certain aspects thereof are concerned. And in particular, what we are concerned about is a situation where the actual procurement processes relating to land acquisition and land disposal are handled by external parties. And we are saying, no, we want that to be handled internally by SANRAL itself. Other aspects, indeed, pertaining to land matters and so on, we definitely need external assistance. But with regards to the actual procurement, because it then determines who actually ends up getting SANRAL land, and from whom do we as SANRAL buy land, and on what terms are we giving out land under SANRAL. The CEO has been complaining that he found in SANRAL, because he's now finishing his third year, he's been complaining that he found a situation where lots of SANRAL land had been given over the years out on terms that are completely ridiculous. As a result, he has established a commercial sort of arm within SANRAL, so that SANRAL land should be used for a financial gain by SANRAL, so that those monies can then be invested in road building by SANRAL and indeed in economic empowerment of our people. So that is a matter that is receiving that kind of attention. The erstwhile conflicts of interpretation between National Treasury and SANRAL in terms of this 30% minimum that needs to go to subcontractors on amounts above, on projects above 30 million rand, on contracts above 30 million rand. That matter has reached a point where National Treasury has now allowed SANRAL, as SANRAL prepares tenders, to come up with particular requirements that will ensure that our interpretation of the 30% is is factored in. And in this respect, what we are saying is that we want to start off right where the project is happening, and therefore at a local municipality level. And once we've exhausted whatever procurement we can do there, we move on to the district municipality level, and thereafter to the provincial level, rather than that wholesale thing where originally National Treasury said local is the whole country. So we are making some progress there. Our management has made it a point that, for example, when we draft tender requirements, we specify that, for example, for that particular area, you get more points than anywhere else. For women, young people, and so on, the points are increased, so that we effectively force tenders to end up getting to the people that we are targeting. So what one is saying, Honorable Chair and members, is that this remains a challenge, but it is no longer as strong a challenge as it used to be. And we are making serious progress there with National Treasury working hand in hand with us. I must emphasize that. The issue of black universities is one that management reported to the board, that it is effectively now moving in that direction over and above the University of the Free State, for example, that we're working with, the University of Pretoria. I cannot recall the exact universities they have mentioned, but the CEO is here. Indeed, they are consciously moving in that direction. With regards to women and the work they do, I think what the CEO was really trying to say is not that we don't believe women can do the work that's done by men. What he was really emphasizing is really more the actual road construction work, where you end up with the lower level skills going more to the men than to the women. But as far as women are concerned, there's a very, if you look at our academy in Port Elizabeth, the number of women brought in to be trained as technicians and trained as engineers has been going up. And indeed, we see that as the trajectory we must follow to get more women involved in our project. And indeed, on the business ownership front, we are very, very committed to ensuring that as we address the overall empowerment of previously excluded people, that women, young people, and people with disability, as well as military veterans, are highly emphasized in that direction. So it is a concern that we are noting from the committee, and indeed we shall be hammering on it even more as management pushes in that direction. With regards to the state of roads and the condition, I think we need to emphasize to the honorable members that the roads under the direct management of SANRAL are some of the best, not in South Africa, but in the whole world. I think we want to emphasize that. There are roads that will usually feed into our own roads, and as a result, some people might not even understand that these ones are not SANRAL roads and so on. For example, there's an anomaly of the R61, where part of it was given to SANRAL, and part of it is still under the Eastern Cape government. When you drive on that road, the minute you leave the SANRAL part and you get onto the provincial part is in a poor, poor state. And some people might then think that it's still a SANRAL road rather than a provincial road. You've got those anomalies. Muloto, because the Gauteng province
was all along refusing to give us their part of Moloto, you actually find that the part under Mpumalanga, which was given to Sanlam, is in a very, very good condition, whereas the part under Gauteng is not in such a good condition. But recently Gauteng announced that it is looking at handing that road to us. The CEO might talk more about that. Do we monitor community development projects? That is another question that was posed. Indeed, Honorable Chair, that is an area we are paying serious attention to. What we actually do is, before we get to a community and deal with the main roads, our own national roads, we go there and we train people via some of the access roads. And that is another way of taking them from your low-level work and getting them ready to participate in the bigger contract later on. So that is monitored very, very closely. The issue of having one woman in the team, I think it is highly noted. The two ladies who are also on our board, unfortunately, the one is overseas, as I indicated, and then Avril couldn't make it, who represents National Treasury. Otherwise, the board is fairly representative. And indeed, we are short of one member, and we have specifically said to the Honorable Minister that we would humbly ask that it be a young woman who is ideally a chartered accountant who can be appointed. So it is a matter that we are also concerned about, and indeed we note what the Honorable Member says about it. With regards to the matter of our environment, 3 billion rand moved from Prasa to Sanral, we need to emphasize that money was given to Sanral because government recognized the fact that Sanral requires monies for some priority projects. And government has given us this as part of the stimulus package in recognition of Sanral actually spending monies and getting the job done. It is not money to take us out of any debt or whatever. I think I need to emphasize that, Honorable Chair. And the 5.75 billion moved from toll, I mean from non-toll to toll. This is really to ensure that Sanral does not, Sanral maintains its going concern status, and also to safeguard the country itself from being downgraded as a result of Sanral debt, among others. Because this debt is actually not Sanral's. I think I want to emphasize this. This is the GFIP is a project that the Gauteng government asked Sanral to carry out on its behalf and to recover the monies via e-tolls. It is unfortunate, of course, that we are where we are today. As Sanral, we are now the ones who are suffering financially because of that. So government is really assisting us, but we are very proactively, because it is us who suggest to government that if we do this, we can manage this without burdening government too much. Otherwise, we would need a real bailout rather than guarantees that government has been giving us. We note the members' request for a clean audit this time, and indeed, we believe that we are on track as far as that is concerned. Management is working very, very hard. And we note the question of consequence management, and we are also concerned about it very, very strongly. And in this regard, what the CEO has done as a start has been to say, when it comes to bonuses that our staff are supposed to get, he has taken something like 30% of what they are supposed to get as a direct result of them not
not dealing with some of the previous audit findings. So that is part of the situation. Where the board is concerned, what we have done is we have said, let us investigate this irregular expenditure, such as I indicated earlier on. And that process is on by our internal auditors, and indeed, once we get the report, we will see where it says we may have there may have been a dereliction of duty or any such thing. And indeed, if the recommendation is for any action, we will ask the CEO to follow up accordingly. So I thought those are some of the matters that I would deal with from where I am sitting, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much. The CEO will take over with regards to others.
Let's hear the voice of the CEO.
Jefferson, thank you very much. I would want your permission, Chair, to start by highlighting the matters that I would request the committee to allow us to submit a written response to. The question of professional services comes up again, so I would like to request that you allow us to respond to that in writing, particularly because there's also a question about who prepared the integrated report and who was contracted to do it, so that we give effect and we don't need more to run after. Secondly, Chair, we will also submit a report on the statistics around the acquisition of land and who are the suppliers that benefit from that process. There is, of course, a big question mark in the market about this MAJV joint venture that Sandler has appointed to manage the portfolio. But in the contract that we signed with them, it specifically stipulates that they have to outsource 50% of the contract to black businesses, not even SMEs. So they don't have a choice. They are compelled to outsource 50% of the work that they were awarded in this portfolio. But we will submit the details. Water use licenses, it's possible that there's no response because there's a framework we use to deal with those matters. I think with the creation of the Infrastructure Act and the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee, we are finding a lot of assistance, we must acknowledge, from the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee in engaging the respective departments from which we would need approvals, water use licenses, mining rights, and so on, EIA, to fast track the process so that it doesn't take as long as this conventional tool for the project on the N3, for instance, from Maritzburg, that was benefiting a lot from the facilitation of the PICC to shorten the period they require for the formal approvals from other departments. So that may very well be highlighted specific problems. Project stoppages, let's try and respond to you. I guess the challenge here is a project stops for 6 months. You have to calculate exactly what the cost and impact is. From the contractor, you do get claims. That is easy and straightforward. But then there are missed opportunities. There are the time value of money and so on and so on. So we're grappling with quantifying actual physical impact financially of the stoppages. You know, the end-to-world post was stopped at intention. And I'm in constant contact with the team that's engaging with the lawyers. So we're trying to quantify the financial impact so that when we appoint a new company, we know how to price the tender now that all of this has happened, and what claims to lodge against the company that deserted the site. It's a very complex process, but I appreciate that at some point you need to be able to give tangible figures for an appreciation to be had. The chairperson has already apologized on our behalf. We want to be able to respond to questions that are presented by the committee. Indeed, we must take accountability. The question on the R62, again, we shall respond to formally in writing. I appreciate that the Honourable Member acknowledges that we at least completed one very important section. We just need to do the further sections. Community media spend, again, we will submit in writing the split in terms of print radio and the geographical spread. Thank you very much, Jefferson. I think before I then deal with the rest of the issues, I'm going to request my colleagues to deal with their specific areas of competence. Mr. Maluleke is at the back. He will deal with financial matters. Mr. Maluleke, as we had apologized, is dealing with it because the woman who is the CFO is out of the country on official government business. But we will relay to Ms. Holder that she was missed by the commission.
Yes. Point of order. It's not the woman who is the CFO. It's the CFO who is the woman. Thank you.
Thank you.
The woman, CFO. CFO is out of the country. It's okay. It's own business. We understand that. You must not just repeat what your chair has already covered, because some of the issues the chair has already gone indicate. Thank you. Take the opportunity to address us as a man.
Thank you, Chair. After Mr. Maluleke, I'm going to ask Mrs. Alice Matthew to speak to the one issue that was raised around the request of submission of a quarterly report on solar authority.
Good day, committee members. I'm going to talk about the depreciated replacement cost. The depreciated replacement cost comes from the International Infrastructure Management Manual, which is used in the United Kingdom, New Zealand, Australia, and South Africa. What it does, it assists in the revaluation of assets, especially assets that are rare and are hardly sold, like our roads and also. So what it says is that if you want to revalue a road, what you do, you say, how much will it cost me to build a new road now? And then you look at the condition of the road that you have. So you adjust for the depreciation after you have done the valuation. Because the road that you have now is not the same as the road that, a new road, because it's been used. Then that's your revaluation. That's how you do your revaluation. It's acceptable in terms of international financial reporting standards, the international public sector standard, and GRAP. So the AJSA has no problem with the way that we revalue our roads and structure. Thank you.
Kort en bondig. Kom in asseblief, mevrou.
Thank you for the honourable member. Yes, we submit a quarterly report every at the end of every quarter to the DOT. It includes a lot of other information which was requested by the Commission 2 years ago, but one element definitely covers progress on the Maloto Road.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me deal with the rest of the matter. Dumsani must worry about his bonus because there are still financial issues I'm going to have to deal with. In terms of the question on irregular expenditure, where it relates to matters of procurement without getting the necessary quote or getting the approval from National Treasury, this is a historic challenge that we are having at Sandra. There are clear measures that we put in place to deal with this matter, starting with the formal establishment of a supply chain unit within Sandra that never existed for our arrival in the organization. We have amended the supply chain policy to tighten it up. We have developed a new set of guidelines for procurement using quotations as well as for procurement terms of RFP to make sure that there's clear guidance to our staff exactly how to run the process. We have designed process flows so that people understand it starts here, it goes there, from here, this is where it goes. And we send regular correspondence through our communication and marketing department to make sure that people are reminded of this. And the feedback of staff has been very positive in how that keeps it current and keeps people reminded of the processes they need to follow. We have also implemented a checklist in the procurement committee to make sure that when people conclude the procurement process, they are able to check and tick against all of the processes they needed to run for them not to be a lapse, because these are very basic lapses, but lapses that catch us significantly during audit time. And of course, we have now implemented what Treasury stipulated through their circular in December last year, setting up a loss control committee that now has the responsibility of interrogating and investigating all the regular expenditure that is obtained to be able to determine whether the company did suffer a loss, and if it did, who is accountable for the loss, so that that loss can be recovered. So we're implementing all of those processes to make sure that we tighten up the supply chain environment to eliminate the possibility of these lapses happening going forward. The specific issue of the interest rate charges that amounted to the irregular expenditure in that project in the Eastern Cape is a very unfortunate thing that, again, we hope doesn't happen again. We sought approval from National Treasury to pay the supplier who had done the work, and National Treasury had refused, asked the permission to do so. And there was a long protracted engagement between National Treasury and us, which then resulted in the interest accumulating until the matter was resolved. When the matter was finally resolved, unfortunately, we were in that situation that interest had been accumulating. Unfortunately, it doesn't accrue to National Treasury, it accrues to us at that time. But it's really an engagement between the National Treasury and the delay that led to the interest accumulating over time. It's unfortunate, and we hope it doesn't happen going forward. We need to be able to resolve matters that come from the future. Then, of course, there's the previous fruitless and wasteful expenditure matter of 15 million that has still not been condoned. We have submitted a request for condonation, but of course, the condonation decision is in the hands of National Treasury, not us. Until National Treasury is satisfied, unfortunately, the matter remains. We do, however, follow up with National Treasury. This is not the only matter. There's quite a number of matters where we have requested condonation. I also do need to submit that we may have taken too much time to explain and demonstrate the role that Sandwell is playing in supporting SMMEs. It was not intended to be done to the detriment of what Sandwell is doing in supporting big platforms. Again, there is a report that we submit to board at every board meeting where we report on tenders that have been awarded in the preceding period to the board meeting. There are established big black companies that get business with Sandwell Corporation. Of course, we need to move those numbers to very, very high percentages. Sandwell has a very comprehensive transformation policy to achieve this. And I want to invite members to really interact with that policy so that we can assist us where we may hit challenges. And I'm going to demonstrate two specific challenges that are preventing us from achieving the objectives of that transformation policy. When the minister first released this in September 2017, our intention for grade 8 and 9 construction companies was to do business exclusively with companies that are 51% black-owned. they are not able to implement that provision because I don't have approval to implement it. It is something that I would really want to drive, but we have been threatened with legal action, accused of being anti-competitive, accused of breaching the Constitution, to the point where there's a bit of fear maybe within the organization to go and implement those that specific provision. I don't have approval from board, I don't have approval from the minister for that specific purpose. And it's very important that we engage and find each other in that regard. Because we've done research, for instance, for grade 9, already 58% we found of entities who are grade 9, more than 51% level. So in fact, we were trying to argue that we must give them brownie points for having taken transformation seriously. But of course, the argument from big business is that if we do that, we're going to kill the construction industry. And that's not the intention. We want to diversify the industry. So in some cases, we do need the support to be able to drive very progressive objectives that we want to achieve. The construction charter in itself is not assisting us to move with the speed that we would want to move. Because in the construction charter, the equity ownership is pegged at 32.5%, not 51%. And that is what people then throw back at us to say, what you are proposing goes against what industry has already agreed. And so we're not able to move with the speed we want because the industry charter says something different. And again, we would want to get the support to get the charter council to move with much quicker speed towards majority class ownership in the charter than they currently have to assist us in this. The second thought that we wanted to drive very strongly with the transformation policy, which again I don't have permission to implement, is to limit the number of contracts that are awarded to a similar entity in some way in a year. Because we've done the analysis and it's true that one company can get more than 20 projects in some way in a year, while other companies are struggling secure within one contract. But when you try to limit, then people say you're being uncompetitive and unconstitutional. They threaten your action. And I don't have permission from my board or from my minister to be able to run with that specific clause. We need the support for us to achieve the kind of impact we want. If I just get those two clauses, I'll be able to move with much better speed in transforming big business than we are currently able to. Again, maybe I do need to apologize for making only one example in terms of our partnership with institutions of higher learning. There are partnerships that we have with other institutions that are black, that are going to achieve very favorable results in terms of what it is we're doing. We started several years ago with a partnership with the University of the Free State, for example. A program we run, which is Science for the Future, where we focus on math and science training. We train the teachers, we train the kids, and we are able to also support the parents themselves to be able to assist kids at home much better. The results are showing in the Free State in terms of their performance on math and science, and in general in terms of their metric performance. We have now expanded that program, and starting this year, the Science for the Future program will be implemented at Nelson Mandela University, at the Walter Sisulu University, at the University of Limpopo, at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, at the University of Mpumalanga, at Salt Lake University of America. 2 weeks ago, I was sitting with all of these institutions discussing exactly the kind of support we provide for them in the end going forward. So there are programs that we're running with other institutions. We took a decision in Sandra that we're going to be developing a new policy that is going to inform our support to institutions of Ireland so that it doesn't lean against the more advantaged entities. We're going to rationalize it, and also we're going to extend it to see that quality is not just comment was not received well. I sincerely apologize. It was not in any way intended to create an impression that we don't take women seriously, and the chairperson has explained. Because we run construction sites, there are practicalities. Let me start with the unskilled portion of the work that we do. There are practicalities that we do need to take into account. Just as in mining, we still do grapple in the construction industry with cases where, because our projects are out in remote areas, there are serious safety concerns about women working too far and working through the night. And so those are the things that we must address in industry to make the construction industry more conducive for women to participate effectively. I'm talking about the low skill level. In terms of ownership, of course, I've already made the point. With our insistence on 100% black ownership, we will be able to see a lot more black businesses, women-owned businesses, coming through in the construction industry, and we do need that support. I must, however, indicate that because I am not a chairperson sitting in a board, I am the accounting officer who must account and ensure compliance with the regulations in this country. It's also important for me to make sure that in all the interventions we make, we insist and ensure on compliance. There are some binding constraints and limitations that are there in legislation and regulations right now that don't allow us to move at the pace that we would like to move. For instance, the PPCFA regulations of 2017 allow us to designate companies that are 51% black owned by women, youth, and people with disabilities only at subcontracting level. For the main tender, you are not allowed to designate. And that is the problem that we have. And we have engaged National Treasury on this quite a number of times. If you look at Section 4 of the PPPFA regulation, it says that an entity like us can issue a tender and say that, number one, we want only bidders that have a certain BEE level to respond. Now, we all know that anyone and everyone can get level 2 or level 1. It doesn't guarantee blacks. But that's the one provision. The second provision they have is that we can designate an SMME. But it doesn't say you can designate an SMME that is 51% black owned. So we can't, at main tender, say that we want only companies that are owned by women that are 51% black. Unfortunately, that's the limitation we have according to regulation. And we will need to create, we've already stated this matter with National Treasury, that is limiting. But where we do have an opportunity is that it says you can stipulate that you want a company that is going to subcontract to entities that are 51% black owned by women, by people with disabilities, and by youth. And we are really maximizing that in the best we've created for at subcontracting level. We would like to do it at the main tender. I thank the committee member for observing that there is some progress that is being made in terms of improving the skills mix at SANRAL. Indeed, I did demonstrate that we do need to deal with the matter that predominantly at unskilled level, you still have the lion's share being African people, but there has been tremendous progress made at technical skill level, where we have brought in a lot of young engineers to be able to start contributing technically to the work that is being done at SANRAL to balance the scale. Yes, and we must acknowledge history, senior technical people are still majority white, but we need to make sure that we support these young ones to be able to take over, because what we are seeing is that a lot of the old skilled white engineers are now retiring. And the big catch-up is that when people retire, there must be people to take over. And we are fast-tracking them in our Technical Excellence Academy, PE, to register as professional engineers so that they are then fully professionalized to be able to take over. With respect to targets that have not been achieved and what it is that we are doing about it, I would like to do justice to the request from the committee members by the system. going through that. The first area was around managing national roads. We did explain there that part of the reason why we did not achieve the target was because contracts were delayed in terms of implementation. Now, there's a couple of reasons why contracts were delayed because of implementation. Number one is what Honorable Mano was raising. Projects are stopped because communities are demanding this and that, or the business forums are demanding the 30%. In those cases, we do intervene, and where technically we are not able to solve problems, we enlist the support of political intervention so that we solve those problems and we are able to continue the project. That is what we would do in every case where we do the challenge, to address the problem so that we can move on. But I guess what I was saying about us improving the regulations with National Treasury would remove the ambiguity that causes people to demand what legally they cannot get to the point where they get frustrated and they stop projects. The second part really relates to concluding agreements, and the solution is just to conclude those agreements so that we can do it. The third part relates to, of course, the movement of monies from non-toll to toll, which has meant that the target for jobs to be created was not met. I've already explained that we are ramping back up the Kenton project, which is going to compensate for the jobs that were missed in the previous time. On the internships, the performers have now been finalized, which means in the ramp-up of tenders, we will be able to deal with the deployment of interns into our project. Issues that relate to the development of standards and software are really a combination of issues that we will resolve with the Department of Transport. Of course, the Department of Transport is the custodian of the Committee of Transport Officials, and in some of the projects we do experience very bad judicial with the committees that are doing some of the work. And I think it is something that we need to work together on to be able to make sure that it doesn't compromise the delivery of what we committed to deliver. Federal must have women in decision-making positions. I do want to confirm that we do. The makeup of the team today really has to do with the portfolio that a person occupies more than a lack of women in the organization or a conscious decision not to involve women. And just to demonstrate, our CFO is a woman, as I indicated. Our company secretary is a woman, both influential and significant positions in the company. Our head of audit, internal audit, is a woman. Our head of risk is a woman. Our head of legal is a woman. So on different occasions when those matters required, those colleagues will be able to join us for those specific matters. But we do take the advice from the committee to make sure that women play a significant role in decision making.
Which explains your efficiency.
Insofar as the regular expenditure is concerned, the question was asked, what's the role of internal audit? 3 years ago, Sandra took a decision to internalize the internal audit function. It had always been outsourced before. And I think we are seeing the benefits of that decision. We have set up a highly effective internal audit department. At the end of the year, I assessed the head of internal audit, the chairperson overruled me and gave them more money. And so it shows that there are a lot of gains that have come with the of the internal audit unit. They account directly to the board, and so there is no sugarcoating on the management side. And they assist us even with implementing the response plan that we prepare after we get the management report. And they give their own perspective to board of how well management is doing with implementing the response plan to audit findings. When training is done, what happens to the people that have been trained? This is a common challenge that needs to be addressed not only by SANRAL but by the different arms of government. SANRAL will be able to provide opportunities in areas where we are for the duration of the project that we are engaged in. But the nature of our work is such that if we have an intervention today in a community, chances are we are going to come back in 7 to 10 years' time because of the quality of road improvements that we do. In between, it's only maintenance that gets done, which means that with the training that we do, there has to be integration of processes between national, provincial, and local government so that some of the skills we create in a locality can then move on to bid for work in provinces and move on to bid for work in municipalities and move on to bid for work in other SOEs so that the dependency is not only in one SOE. This is the conversation we continue to have, and if we integrate our programs, we will be able to achieve more. We do have integrated structures that perform really well in certain parts of our country, but of course in other parts we do need to improve those relationships, like in housing. I think the chairperson has dealt with the comment around the poor state of infrastructure in South Africa. Of course, the road user doesn't care who owns the road, they just want to drive on a good road. And it's part of the role that the Department of Transport and Africa's with to make sure that when we implement things like the strategic framework for roads, we ensure standardization of standards as far as possible so that the government has this significant experience of moving off a national road into a provincial road, into a municipal road. SANRAL, however, as a policy, provides support as enabled by our Act to assist other road authorities who struggle to be able to implement their money. Who benefits from money made from toll roads? First of all, in the Act, it makes it very clear that we are allowed only to spend money that is generated on a specific toll scheme on that toll scheme. So, apart from what has been happening with JIPIP and the rescues that has happened, you would generally be disciplined to make sure that revenues generated in a specific toll scheme are reinvested in that toll scheme, so that that toll scheme is always in good condition, and the people that use that corridor always derive that benefit. And of course, there's no racial segregation or any form of segregation in terms of the use of that specific toll road. The only choice the user must make is whether they're willing to pay or not, so whether or not they're willing to use the road. But if you use it, you derive all the benefit that comes with that road, and there's no cross-pollination with other roads in general. I note the concern around some of the national roads in the Free State. Of course, we have a strong partnership with the province of the Free State in terms of improving the road network that we have in the province. We partnered to build overload control facilities in some of the corridors in the Free State so that we are able to protect our road network from the people that willfully overload, damaging our roads and reducing their lifespan. We have, of course, recently completed the improvement of the intersection between the R712, if I'm not mistaken, and the N5, 712 being the road that goes to Kwa, to make sure that we try and improve the safety performance of that road. I'm aware that there is a request now to even improve on those improvements by building an interchange at that intersection. Again, it's a conversation we are having with the National Department of Transport, because we're going to have to see how, between us and province, we can chip in to be able to generate sufficient funds to do what has now recently been requested. But certainly, the improvements that we have made now have made much different compared to the situation that was at the time. Our community development projects being maintained, monitored. Yes, they are. Of course, corruption and cutting of corners is a general problem in the construction industry that we always have to manage. But I think the message is very clear in the market. Very, very few attempts to be caught scandals, because if you are caught doing so, the consequences are very, very stark. Sandoval has banned contractors for 5 to 10 years in cases where they have deliberately sought to defraud Sandoval. We have a very strict project management regime, and our quality assurance is being adhered to very strictly. So we do monitor these projects. But of course, we're dealing with human beings, and we will always try to confirm it. But we strongly encourage our citizens to let us know where these happen so that we can intervene decisively. How are people informed about scholarship programs? First of all, we work with the Department of Education. They help us identify the needs. They help us identify the schools that have needs so that we can then go and make sure that we inform them of our scholarship program for high schools. We also do use local media to publish. We use our website and Sandoval to publish. And we use the instruments like taking Sandoval to the people when we go to communities to also inform them on Sandoval scholarships and bursaries that they can benefit from. Who is the custodian of the SDM policy in Sandoval? It is the CFO, who is supported by the Chief Supply Chain Management Officer. Between those two ladies, we have implemented a lot of controls to try and stem the tide of wanton disregard for compliance with policies within the organization. Consequence management, the Chairperson has started to say so. Ella indicated by implementing the loss control committee that was instructed by National Treasury in December last year, it's going to assist us a lot, because in that committee, which I chair myself, we look at irregular expenditure. We try and determine, and Mr. Malulege also here, the Deputy CFO, sits in the committee. We look at whether there was indeed a loss to the company. We then look at who is responsible for that loss. And looking at the balance of the evidence provided, we can then make conclusions whether that loss should be recovered from that individual.
In conclusion.
Yes. Okay, I can give these other ones here, but I'm almost done, Chairperson. Just to clarify, the figures tend to sound similar, but they're different. So the stimulus package was funded through a 3.5 billion rand vehicle, which was an equitable share allocation from National Treasury, directly intended for the stimulus package. The 3 billion rand from FASA was given to Sandoval in February of the financial year ending in March. Did you say that very clearly? And yet to meet a company that can then spend 3 million in a month. But you have used that money to bring forward a lot of the projects that we had already planned that were not funded. And those projects are currently going through this ramp up tender process for us to get the professional services to finalize design so that we can then implement those projects. The collusion investigation by the SARS, it's a matter that concerns us as well. It has been underway for some time. We have had interactions with SARS in the previous year, but they were only informing us that the investigation is continuing, and they had requested specific information that they needed us to supply, which we indeed did supply. We don't really have a status update from SARS as we speak, and we don't know when the process is scheduled to end. I would believe that at the right time they would let us know, but if anyone can assist us where the SARS is concerned, we would very much appreciate that assistance. The last one, Chairperson, I wanted to deal with is the sinkhole of the N12. Of course, what complicates the matter in the sinkhole in the N12 is that the source is in municipal land. The municipality has confirmed that they would want to fix the problem, but they don't have the funds. Now, it is a water problem that is impacting on the road. Sunrail engaged to try and get a partnership going so that we can provide part of the funding and they can provide part of the funding. They don't have the funding to fix the water problem. They would not have the funding to fix the sinkhole problem. Now, the challenge is our act also limits us to working within our jurisdiction, which is wrong. We can't use road monies to fix water problems. And that is the challenge that we face. So through the Department of Transport, we have been requesting maybe this matter to be elevated to provincial level so that the province maybe is able to assist. Mr. Shabita is here, he's listening, and I'm sure he will assist us to take the matter forward. But I fully agree that this matter has delayed for far too long, and the sinkhole is growing and growing, and it's not safe at all. Thank you very much, Chairman.
That was a detailed mitigating exercise. That's the beauty of people sitting under one roof and sharing information, clearing perceptions, and clearing their minds. What I get from both these discussions is that when we meet Treasury, we must talk to Treasury. It's very clear, and we'll mention you. We hear you saying Treasury is a stumbling block in terms of taking South Africa forward, transformation-wise and efficiency-wise. Am I quoting you correctly?
I probably would not have used those words.
No, I agree with you. I think I agree with you. Why would Treasury really refuse you paying people and after some time you pay even the interest? That's ridiculous. I have advised entities not to argue with the Office of the Auditor General, because, you know, you lose all the time. It's like SARS. But let me also take advantage that the office is here. You know, in your case, I've seen many cases like this one, where you just feel that at least the office is being very technical here. Honestly, on this one, 179 million. From where I'm seated, I don't find issues where the office of the AG is saying there's malicious intentions here, this and that were not followed, and so forth and so on. But I think those are your technicalities. Comply with the office. And we are happy you're complying anyway. The stimulus package, as you use them, I can see you are very angry with Gauteng. It's maybe because of this GIF. You have done 26 projects all in all. Am I correct? Now, out of 26 projects, 11 projects are in KZN. 11. You have 7 in Mpumalanga. You have only 3. In Eastern Cape, 1 Limpopo, 1 Northwest, Northern Cape, 0. Western Cape, 0. Gauteng, 0. You may have your own reasons as people, but it paints a different picture if you look at it. You know, the stimulus package was meant to stimulate economic activity in the country. Go back and look at those issues. They are not painting a very good picture, I must say. We will take Treasury on the issue of their interpretation. But maybe we must just understand, and we'll understand that from the Department of Transport. If I was the Minister of Transport, I wouldn't accept this thing, that my entity is run by Treasury. Because in your presentation, you are saying we're working harmoniously, closely with Treasury. I mean, that's ridiculous. The shareholders, the Department of Transport, they must assist you. I don't know, but I'm just raising that fact because I hear it coming clearly, and to me it's an anomaly. Before you can do something, you must go and ask another department, when you have your mother department, shareholder. We'll raise that with Treasury. This issue of women, men, white, black, they are not actually assisting us to grow and build a non-racial, non-sexist, united South Africa. From where I'm seated, the longer we perpetuate this debate, the bigger the divisions are going to be in the country. Our constitution, as you quote it, where you want to quote it, says South Africa is a non-racial, non-sexist, united country, right? As leaders, we should try and manage that space. It should not come easily. We should not make Mr. Maluleke feel bad when he's here because he's not a woman. We should not make Honorable Hunsinger feel bad when he's here because he's a white man. You know, we must try to deal with those issues and affirm those who need to be affirmed and close that chapter so that we can work on uniting the people of South Africa. Are we in agreement, honorable members? So we will take you on this issue of the charter, construction charter. In your response that we may request by midday Monday for other programs, put those issues there so that we deal with them and close this chapter of black and white. You know, normally when you say black, I look at you and say, yes, man, this thing is tough. When you say black, you must actually mention what do you mean when you say black. You're talking about Indians, you're talking about Chinese, you're talking about colors, you're talking about Africans, right? Am I correct? Now, when you say 50-50, black and white, when you talk about white, what are you talking about? You're talking about white. Am I correct? And black, you have clapped all this people under one umbrella, and you think it's 50-50. It is not. It is not. It's not. It's not your making. It's how the law is, and I think we must deal with that so that we close this thing of black and white and so forth. That's not what we want to promote as the leaders in South Africa. We'll also heed your advice. Hey, Treasury is problematic. So you're saying Treasury says you can't have a black woman-owned company enjoying specifications as a main tender. You can't. Yeah, you can't ring fence. Where's our mom's sisters? You can't do that. But you can when you have any other company to subcontract this. What is that? What is the meaning of transformation in this country? If for in the 25 years you are here and you want to tell us there is no black company that can run a tender as a main company and subcontract the other way around. It's not your own making. We have yet you, we'll assist you. And let me end before I lament. We must maintain that through all this. Oh, okay, the last issue. We understand you are saying Gauteng government does this. They are saying to us, they said to us, they want the e-toll. We built the e-toll. When the e-toll is there, they say, no, we don't want this thing. Yeah, that's what you have said to us. I'm just putting it out there, and CEO is saying this is a political football, as you put it. I'm a politician, I'm not part of that football. So please don't include me. You know. But don't you have mechanisms? If they have said they want it, don't you have something in writing? Or as Sandra, you also fell into this trap, they called you, hey, we want it, and you ran for it. You should be having a request from Gauteng government, and if you have that request, take this government at all, so that we close that matter. We become responsible as citizens. If we have said to you, build entry this way, we requested and you build, then we must be responsible and take whatever that we need to take. I'm just saying, where you are right, we must stand with you. And where you are wrong, we must really say, pick up. Otherwise, you are doing very well, Chair, and your team will support you. Going forward, we'll raise issues. And thank you very much for coming and seeing us. You are liberated.
Thank you.
We have set your written responses